Blog Talk Radio.
Conversations with your host, Charles Williams. Today we are joined by author Ezra Aharon. He's author, columnist, political analyst. He's author of two books. First book is Pawn Sovereignty, and his latest book is Sovereign Evolution. He's born in Newark, New Jersey, and raised in Passaic, New Jersey. He earned his Bachelor of Science in Business Management from Hampton University in 1980. He has lived and worked in West Africa, where his relationships span from presidents and government officials to everyday people in remote villages. His originality of thought, coupled with his international experience, provides a unique scope of reference that gives his books uncommon distinction. And he can be reached, and his columns can be read at EzraSpeaks.com. Welcome to African Conversations, Brother Aharon.
Thank you, good brother. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure is all mine. Been anxiously awaiting the opportunity to discuss with you your work, your expanded vision, insight. I've been telling people that this is the political science book for the 21st century. What the works of Garvey, Carter Woodson were for the early to mid 20th century. This you have said.
No, I was going to say, I appreciate that, brother. Go ahead.
Oh, yes, that's right. I wanted to definitely want to turn our audience on to, you know, what you, your premise, your thesis about from civil rights to sovereign rights, and what's the real deal concerning, you know, the type of rights that we should be trying to pursue and establish for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, I always say that freedom is not something stagnant. It's a fluid process. Freedom is a moving target. And as issues and conditions and world affairs change, so must the people's ideals and actions change to be commensurate with the changes of the days and times. And so as a people, we have experienced a more so drip, 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 drop, drop, drop form of freedoms, whereby if you look at it and say from Harriet Tubman to Dr. King to today's time with President Obama, the freedom that we've acquired exists by virtue of a continuum of evolutions. And hence I titled my latest book, Sovereign Evolution, because the levels of freedoms that we've achieved, each one is built on the prior legacies and achievements of the past, and they do not conflict with the prior freedoms. So whereby Harriet Tubman embraced a form of freedom that we would not accept today, it did not clash with Dr. King as he moved the evolution on from being segregated to being integrated. Yet it did not clash with Tubman. It was a continuation. So today with Barack Obama, as he's moved into the seat of government, and we have black people who are sitting in more and more seats of government, that does not in any way clash with Dr. King's vision and what he aspired. It is a continuation. It is a continuum of that. And so the major question that my book poses is, where do we go from here? Are there freedoms? Are there levels of insights, levels of awareness, levels of achievement that we need to now focus on? And what I argue is that part of that continuum, that nexium, that nexus, that continuum has to do with a sovereign consciousness. So in advancing our political progression, sovereign evolution declares what I determine to be freedom and equality in 21st century terms and times. And the book uses sovereign principles and sovereign standards as the political lens to interpret our historical development and to determine our future potential as a people.
Right. It seems as though that we've stopped evolving. We haven't envisioned a new levels of freedom or that it's actually miraculously sovereignty for us. Instead, we have romanticized the achievements of the past as though that is the end of, you know, our struggle. I've even heard some people say the struggle is over. You know, and these people who are thoroughly Americanized, as you have described in your book, the process we can also call it assimilation. They see themselves as totally interwoven within the fabric of American consciousness, and they look at all the steps toward, you know, building more sovereignty or more rights as mere stepping stones to Americanization. And so our culture has not sought. Well, I guess we can also say, like, the way, what kind of, I mean, I gotta ask you a question about this. What kind of vision do you see? I know the vision that you see for us as in terms of achieving, you know, ultimate sovereignty. But as far as what's going on in popular political cultural thought among, you know, Africans in America, from what they've been saying and articulating and the things they're doing, what do they expect to get out of this whole deal? What do you think they expect to get?
Well, you said a few things that would prompt me to give a response in several ways. But let me begin by saying about the stagnation that you mentioned, because there is a destructive stagnation that has come about because we've been welded to a 1960s era of looking at the world and examining ourselves, when in fact the 60s is a long bygone era of time. If you look at the world today, you'll find that of the nearly 200 nations that exist today, over 80 of them were established since we became integrated into America in the 1960s. Why am I telling you that? I'm saying that to say that the political landscape of the world has changed so much from the 60s that by using that frame of reference, by using that lens of critique, we have not allowed ourselves to evolve with the times. What you find is that people don't fight and die to be integrated with other people. People generally fight and die to have their own political and ideological self-identity. And that is what has been happening throughout the world. There's an African expression that says, do not raise your children on borrowed food. And that does not just apply to economics or financial things, but there are political and ideological implications of that as well. Because when you borrow something, you do not own and control the item that you possess, and you're disadvantaged because you're accountable to the terms and the conditions of those who are the rightful owners. And there's such a thing as sovereign ownership and sovereign possession, which belongs to Euro-Americans who formed and established and founded this government and society. But to begin to answer the question, you know, the destructive stagnation that we face, I argue the true solution to that has to do with understanding and identifying with a sovereign consciousness. Right. I want the audience to understand that when I speak of sovereignty, of course there's an absoluteness to it, an authoritative aspect of it. There is a supremacy of it. But first and foremost, you have to understand that sovereignty is a consciousness.
Right.
And it is the consciousness of sovereignty that I relate to in the book. I take a definition taken from the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, which states that sovereignty is a modern notion of political authority that's expressed in both practical institutions and political thought. And so it is the political thought of sovereignty that I deal with primarily, because when you talk about governments and territories, those things are products and symbols of sovereignty. That is not actually sovereignty. The sovereignty exists in the minds of the people who create those products and symbols.
Right.
And so we have to understand that, you know, you don't become sovereign by establishing a military or a government or having territory. Those are the products of it. You become sovereign primarily and foremost by beginning to develop a sovereign consciousness. That is what is important, and that's what we must understand, because the people cannot do what they cannot think. So
exactly.
It's important to understand that in this 21st century time, sovereign consciousness is the pervading and the prevailing element that people are seeking to extract themselves from the difficulties and the entanglements of others who impose their political will upon them.
Exactly. I mean, that's like when people often use the term white supremacy to describe a thought pattern of Europeans, that wherever they are supreme, and everyone is subject to their governance. And
mm-hmm.
and people, you know, people who have a sovereign agenda, will, you know, we often say that, hey, well, you know, they're practicing white supremacy. They don't have the right to try to subject everyone to their will, which I term their type of conduct is like a universal sovereignty of Europeans. and they believe that they can go like the Flash Gordon cartoons or Star Trek, all their programs. They talk about the Borg, and they want to go and destroy all these other cultures and assimilate their biological and technological data for the express benefit of the Borg. And I've used that as a, it was from a Star Trek Voyager. And I'm like, they're basically telling you this is what they do, this is how they operate, and this is how they function. And we have to develop our own counter strategy to that way of thinking. And that's what we have, you discuss this in your book, that we have settled it into being their servants. And that is the real problem. We have given up on sovereignty and decided, hey, being a servant to these people is adequate enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, first, it's important to understand that those who seek and aspire Americanization, they have every right to do so. And even those amongst us who are black nationalists or who are sovereign-minded, it is in our interest to support those who want to be Americanized, because our struggle is not a struggle of either or. It is now become a necessity of both and.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at America evolved out of Great Britain. By blood and heritage, Americans and Britons, they're the same people.
Right.
They are two people who politically have evolved into two different political and ideological designations, and they have two distinct sovereign identities. But no one questions today whether those the two nations should exist, even though they've basically come out of one people. So the legitimacy of Britain and America, no one questions it. So what do we know from that? What do we learn from that? That a singular people can have two distinct sovereign identities. So if one people can have two distinct sovereign identities, then how is it that we, being Africans in America, have been brought into this ideological framework of thinking that our lives depend on the successful integration with Euro-Americans? And so even though we have rightful claims to Americanization, there's always been a segment of those of us who've always been more African than American. But there always have been counter forces and superior forces that have made those aspirations seemingly illegitimate or less than or something undesirable or something radical. But there are a lot of questions that need to be answered, particularly since we still face many of the same identical problems or extensions of the same problems that date back to 1865. So as long as those questions and as long as those problems remain unresolved, the issue and the question of sovereignty will always remain relevant. Because one thing about sovereignty is that it allows you to deal with issues based on your own self-interest, your own political and ideological self-identity, so that you could, come up with self-solutions to those issues. So that's why the consciousness is important. And it's not necessarily an issue whereby we sit down and we're talking about formulating a government and society. That's far down the line. That's the ultimate end product of the thinking. But the significance of embracing such a framework of thought is to identify objectively where others are taking political and ideological advantage over you, and whereby you need to assert yourself in order to truly become and to be free in a manner that you self-define.
Right. I like when you mentioned how those who seek Americanization, they do have the right to do so.
Absolutely.
The problem, one of the major problems we've seen within our, general culture of our people of our nation, is that those who want Americanization do everything in their power to try to interfere with our ability to be sovereign.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have this struggle going on back and forth,
mm-hmm.
state where, you know, we have this movement, people saying that, you know, we should all be together and we shouldn't split up, when that's exactly what we need to do, is split up. If you want, you
well,
know, those...
You know, yeah, I never use the term split or separate or segregate because it detracts from the true value and the significance of what sovereignty is all about. Because mm-hmm. when you look at those terminologies like segregation and so forth, those are creations of this society that reflects a system of injustice. When you're talking about sovereignty, you're talking about seeking justice.
Right.
And that those who want to be Americanized should not find any contradiction or conflict with those of us who do not. Why do I say that? Because both of them are legitimate. Both of them have a relevant place within our history. And we have to evolve to the point where we understand that the two ideals are not in conflict. We can look at history and learn from Euro-Americans and British people. Why? Because today, America and Britain, they're two of the strongest democracies in the world and two of the strongest allies, democratic allies in the world. And they don't sit at the table arguing about what happened in the past. It's a past conflict, and today they've moved on. If the Queen of England is here and it's the 4th of July, she'll watch fireworks too and go to a cookout and eat whatever. There's no conflict between the two. And so one of the things that I argue in the book is that it's part of the maturity process that we have to go through to understand how we can sit on either side of the table and understand why it is not in conflict with the other. As I said, it's an evolution. But we have just as much rightful claims to Americanization as we do to our own African heritage. See, it's an issue. It's a problem that is not one that has been resolved or looked at in the 21st century. No other group of people have the set of circumstances in history like us. And so unless we sit down and figure it out, it's not going to come on the 6 o'clock news, or it's not going to be taught in the universities.
Right. Right. I mean, I agree. I'm not, when I was using the term split up, I didn't mean in like a hostile fashion.
Mm-hmm.
We're not on, you know, friendly terms or, you know, cordial terms or whatever. It was that, you know, they're clearly defined, you know, ways of doing things, and even though we were already doing it, you know, we're already like we're having this conversation about sovereignty, and those that are not interested in sovereignty, interested in Americanization, they're in another forum having discussions about Americanization, you know,
mm-hmm.
and we,
mm-hmm.
we deal with those people, you know, they're our relatives and neighbors and so forth. I was talking about like when people try to say, you know, usually from the other side of the aisle, those who are seeking Americanization, they like to criticize
mm-hmm.
us or people who may be middle of the road want to say, hey, we need to, you know, harmonize these two directions. And I was
mm-hmm.
just saying, well, we can't be seeking contradictory objectives and working in direct the same way. Where it's like just like you mentioned
right.
with Great Britain and United States, well, they're working for the same objective.
Right. They
want global domination for the Anglo-American Germanic Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
just basically, they argued and fought over, you know, their particular cut of the tape, of the spoils of the wars that they were
yes.
waging. Well,
mm-hmm.
we're not doing that. You know,
mm-hmm.
they're arguing to or struggling to sit at the feet of the European, and we're arguing to stand on our own independent of the European. You know, our situation is similar, where there's conflict with the, or not conflict, but different interest with a relative, when theirs is,
right.
But theirs, ours is where we're seeking a polarized objectives. So that's what I meant by that, you know, people learning to be comfortable with, you know, they're going in different directions, no need for animosity, and that we still relate to each other, we still can be allies, however, understand that we don't have the same end game.
Mm-hmm. And you know, let me further define a sovereign consciousness and why it's important, because a people who have struggled as we have for 400 years, and we're still seeking a drip, drip, drip form of advancement of freedoms, sovereignty or sovereign consciousness, sovereign insights, sovereign realizations allow you to, if it were in a medical sense, it allows you to perform an MRI.
Right.
So you could really look at the essence of the problems, where we as a people lie at fault, where we have come up short, where we have expectations that are going to remain unfulfilled. You know, how is it that we truly define freedom? What is equality? Because, as I argue in the book, political equality is much different than mathematical equality. In math, you have two different equations, or the sum of two variables that prove to be identical in value, hence equal or equality. But in political terms, it's not the same that you are equal in value. It may be a paper transaction where words are written on paper, or where you say, well, you have equal protection of by law or of the law, but how does that translate into reality? When you look at our issues concerning criminal justice or injustice, that's a sovereign issue.
Right.
And I would argue with anyone to tell me differently that it's not. There's the way the criminal justice system has worked against us historically is a typical argument, a typical example of why degrees of sovereign consciousness is necessary. And so when you go down the checklist to examine yourself politically with this political MRI, this economic MRI, and social and so forth, you begin to get a true picture of what the ailments of our people, what they really are, what they really look like, and it gives you an idea of what has to happen to cure these ailments.
Right.
So that's why it's important, because it gives you the highest level of objective insights to yourself, as well as allow you to examine others and where others are taking political and ideological advantage over you. So it's important to have that framework of thinking working to our advantage.
Exactly, because, you know, you mentioned about the questions that we must ask concerning equality and justices or injustices, and we have to look at them, like as you said, and a framework of sovereignty, because when we see all these things, these problems that we've had for over 400 years not being resolved in all that time, and we must bring the issue to a priority that we don't have sovereignty in this, under this government system framework, and whatever is most appropriate to label it. We don't have it. So until we have sovereignty, that is self-determination, rules to determine our futures and whatnot, and take care of our problems without any kind of interference from foreigners, we're going to continue to pay the consequences of not having sovereignty.
Absolutely. And you know, when we look at our assimilation, we use the 60s, once again, as a barometer, and we use equality as a barometer. But a government exists for the purpose to grant citizens civil rights and such things as equality as it's written on paper. That's the purpose of a government. So when a government does that, a government should get no credit for doing what it's set up and designed to do. That's its function.
Right.
But we give the U.S. government credit for treating us civilly because we have a psychology where we examine our progress from a standpoint of being enslaved.
Exactly.
And then everything after enslavement, we give them credit for treating us humanely or treating
exactly.
us morally.
Right. It
when
sets
in
the bar
fact,
so
yes,
low.
When it, right.
Yeah, the
and
bar.
That standard is a poor standard to use.
Right. Exactly. The bar is so low that they've been beating and raping us, and so when they decide to, you know, say hello, we're thinking, we're thinking everything is so much better. We're living in a better society, and that is, gross, miss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're throwing the money on that because, until we, like you said, develop that a framework to develop the wherewithal to seek greater degrees in cyber. You mentioned in the book about how this the Nebraska school system was split up into three segments of Hispanic, black, and white, and
mm-hmm.
and I so ironic how the black school district or some legislator was. Complaining about disintegration, about being segregated, and
mm-hmm.
that school system had total control over its curriculum, and I was like, that's my dream.
Mm-hmm.
Have a school with no outside interference. We should go for it, but that's the Americanization faction doesn't want sovereignty. They're not seeking greater degrees of sovereignty to educate their children appropriately. And so these are the types of injustices we are going to keep ourselves in the position to endure because we don't want it. What do you say on that?
Well, I think as well, let me say that sovereignty, as I said, it deals with political thought.
Right.
And it deals with practical institutions. But to show you how they intersect the political thought, political institutions, you'll find that America has numerous research and policy organizations and institutions that are there to shape the political, the social, the economic, even the military form and direction of the nation. You have the RAND Corporation, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Brookings Institute. You go on and on. Hoover Institution, Carnegie Foundation, and now they have the Foundation for a New America. And all of these groups are integral to the direction and the mold that Americanization uses, not just domestically, but internationally. And so you see the political thought of sovereignty being exercised in these various think tank organizations. Now, as I mentioned, those organizations, and then you look at African Americans, you'll find that on par, we do not have institutions that can contend eye to eye with those institutions that I just referenced.
Mm-hmm.
And that shows a great disadvantage and a great intellectual inequality that exists in this country because certain things you cannot leave to proxy for other people to do for you or for other people to solve for you. And as long as we lag behind in having thinking processes and thinking mechanics of free will thinking that is being espoused in various institutions, then we're going to remain on the short end of this intellectual war, and thinking and believing that by proxy other people are going to solve our issues for us. It is not going to happen. And once again, that's why these realizations that I'm speaking about must become part of our 21st century framework of thinking.
Exactly. Because we, you know, we have, I believe, chosen a certain, I mean, not everyone, but those who are who seek Americanization have chosen ignorance. They have turned away from this particular agenda, and they want, I don't think, my personal opinion, I don't believe they want these problems to be addressed and or solved. I believe they want to improve their economic life, not necessarily political life, but they want to have some influence with the Anglo-American establishment. They don't seek any power because they know their power.
Well, that's part of integration, you know, and part of assimilation, because you have to ask yourself, what is an American?
Mm-hmm.
Americans are a makeup of all different nationalities, people who come from all over the world. You may live in a neighborhood where an Italian guy lives around the corner, a German person lives next to you, and a Nigerian lives across the street. And all of these people coming from different backgrounds and nationalities and ethnicities, they all call themselves American. So mm-hmm. how is it? What is it about America that allows people to identify with this one particular identity? Well, if you look in the U.S. Foreign Policy Encyclopedia, it'll tell you that being American is not a birthright, but it's a willingness to believe in a certain set of political and social principles and values and so forth. So being an American is an ideological commitment. So mm-hmm. it's part of a means of thinking. So when you adapt to Americanization, you are, in essence, surrendering part of what you left in Italy or in Greece or in Nigeria, and you're becoming part of a greater whole. Now, mind you, though, that America is a melting pot of ethnicities in society, but it's not a melting pot of sovereignties within government. There's a mm-hmm. big difference.
Right.
Because the sovereignty of this country, the sovereignty of Euro-Americans, is indivisible and is non-transferable. It's not something that the founders intended to be sliced into small pieces that they share with different people as they come through the Statue of Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
And so unless defeated in war, they have no intent to allow the Angloness or the absoluteness of their sovereignty to be diluted by anyone, especially the people who were once deliberately enslaved here on these shores. There's a pecking order of power that exists in this nation and every other industrialized nation that has a diverse or ethnically diverse population. And the power starts with the group who's most able to leverage their capital might into political influence. And then all other influences, all other rights and privileges and so forth, they're window dressings, because he who exerts the political power and controls economics, they reside at the top of the pecking order. And so you have to understand that even though all people are Americans by virtue of buying into this identity or the ideology, you know, there are differences in terms of how the political structure operates. And so to show you that, you know, it's an ideology, it's why, you know, when people come here and they want to naturalize as citizens, they have to take a Jeopardy game-like quiz in order to show that they are ideologically suited or fitted for society. So, that, you know, they have to learn certain jingles like, you know, America the Beautiful, My Country, Tears of Thee, and so forth. And they have to give the proper responses to questions in order to show their fitness into Americanization. So it is an ideology, and part of that ideology calls for you to drop at the doorstep of democracy, particularly us, drop at the doorstep of democracy any types of sovereign or any type of freedoms that would run contrary or counter to the grain of Americanization, which is why the question of our sovereignty has never been addressed. It wasn't addressed in 1865, even though it was a question of deporting us. It wasn't a question of how is it that these people can establish their own political and ideological self-identity and dignity and truly be equal, as the Declaration of Independence refers to, in terms of sovereign equality with the rest of the people, the rest of the nations on earth. That was not the conversation then. It is not the conversation now.
Right. Right, because we have misread the Declaration of Independence to assume that we were included as a part of the, you know, political establishment. You know, we believe that when they're saying all men are created equal, that they're considering us men. When they're saying, they're talking about...
Well, that's a strategy.
Right, that's a strategy, mm-hmm. Right. And
that's a strategy. That's a document written to the world to appeal so that others can understand exactly what their aspirations were at the time. That's not a document that speaks for all mankind or speaks for the aspirations of African people.
Right.
Because it says clearly that you declare to the world the issues that call for you to have your sovereignty, to separate, because that's the document is a document of separation.
Exactly.
Not a document of integration.
Right. You know, I've often joked about about the American political ideology being cultish, you know, because
mm-hmm.
You just basically laid out the framework of a religion, you know, when you describe it. And I've been saying it all the time, you know, they have these dogmas, you know, doctrines, that is, that one must believe in order to be considered an American. And to not believe in these dogmas is to be, some type of...
un-American.
It's an un-American, right? Right, you're a blasphemer, or you know, heretic.
Yeah, un-American.
You know, that's exactly mm-hmm. what it is, and so people feel pressure through some sort of maybe social pressure, what have you, maybe psychological brainwashing, to attempt to maintain their conformity with American interests at the expense of their own. Because I was willing to say Africans and Americans are the only people that have to sacrifice our interests in, you know, here and abroad in order to remain in
mm-hmm.
this society or just even remain alive, period. Or not be
mm-hmm.
more severely threatened than we are. But
mm-hmm.
exactly what it is, one must surrender, like you said, let's leave something behind in the nation from which they came in order to become a part of the religion of America. And the American Anglo aristocracy is the priesthood, if you will, you know, of these aristocrats, all these presidents. They're all interbred and related to one another, and no one can get to, like say, high office unless they have both the pedigree and the wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what
well,
I like. Go ahead.
I was going to say the structure of Americanization and its background, we all know it to a certain extent. When we understand the doctrines, the documents, the declarations, what I call the three D's of every nation, which presents a nation with its credentials to exist. You know, one of the doctrines of Americanization, Manifest Destiny, which is part of the subtitle of my book, Manifest Destiny from Civil Rights to Sovereign Rights, Manifest Destiny did not just involve the westward expansion of territory, but the political and ideological domination of their governing principles and practices, which are Anglo-Protestant in nature. Now, does that make them bad people? Well, the issue is, where's the line where it's being imposed, and where's the line where it's being accepted by Africans in America? That's the question. Because those who want it and seek it and aspire it, you know, as we've been saying, they have every right to it. So the question is not what they've done or what they're doing. The question is, what are we going to do? What will we do in order to make ourselves relevant, in order to make ourselves visible in the world? That's the challenge. The movements throughout the world that has taken place since the 1960s, you know, people are seeking their self-authentic selves. And so when you feel like you're inauthentic politically as a people, then the challenge, the question is for those of us who feel that way to identify ourselves and to begin to work strategically, intellectually, and politically in a way that we know have worked in the past for other people who've been in similar predicaments who seek freedom. I say that there's no blueprint to get us out of the quagmire that we're in, but there's certainly people in the world who set up guideposts that we could look at as references to being possible guidelines for us to follow. So those are the real challenges, because, you know, I like to say, you know, Americanization is what it is, and it's not a matter of us seeking to reform Americanization. It is more a matter of us seeking to transform ourselves, because Americanization, it is what it is. Like it, love it, or leave it, or whatever. It is what it is. And we understand the basic dimensions of it and what we're faced with.
Exactly. We must, we have to, right, put it, you know, lay it all out and try to understand it, and so we can set about the task of, creating our own agenda for our future.
Yes, absolutely.
Right, and studying the issues. And I found that has been a large problem with, I guess, some people who may claim to be sovereign-minded. They don't know really what has, you know, for streams of history. You got to, like, you know, if you study the documents, like the Emancipation Proclamation and Declaration, all, you know, Declaration of Independence, and you looked at them, you looked at other cultures, other nations, ancient and contemporary. And so by looking at that, you're able to draw clear, concise conclusions as to what's going on, help you to understand the nature of the current events and where they may possibly lead. And we need to really get back in touch, not only with the type of research that you are doing, but get back in touch with our old research that we already have and we're not studying well enough, like Garvey and other great thinkers from our people.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I deal with in the book, and that's part of the major themes of the book, has to do with the construct of freedom that we have versus the construct of freedom that Euro-Americans have. Theirs being based on independence, ours being based on emancipation. Let us look at the two terms. Is emancipation the equivalent of independence? Are they interchangeable? And so when you're talking about studying the ideas of those before us, it is also just as important to look at ourselves in these days and times and understand in a holistic way where we're at. Because our assimilation did not and does not constitute what I call a symmetrical merger of two equally liberated people,
mm-hmm.
whereby we came into the relationship as a people with our own declaration of independence, our own assertiveness and vision of independence. We came in to be part of the independence that they already self-established. And so what I say is a vastly overlooked but a very predominant cause of all racial imbalances of power stems from the dissimilarities in our concepts and our orientations of what it means to be free. And within that same context, we have a different threshold than Europeans of what it means to be repressed.
Right.
Because if we tried to superimpose a way of life upon them that has been normalized with us, just use the criminal justice system as an example, or using our lack of political representation, say, in the Senate as an example, they would have dropped bombs on us a long time ago.
Right.
Because that's a threshold of repression that history has proven they're not willing to tolerate. But for us, it has become normalized. And so we have what I argue are two different constructs of what we define as what it means to be free. And this is evidence in the fact that we've accepted a gradual and adaptable kind of construct of freedom that's been basically confined to civil rights, integration, and citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, Euro-Americans, they have a non-negotiable and inflexible construct of freedom whereby they demand the absoluteness of sovereignty, independence, and statehood. Nothing less could have satisfied their political taste buds then, nor at this point. Nothing less than that. So these conceptual dissimilarities of freedom, I argue, are by far the most consequential yet vastly overlooked sources of the racial imbalances of power that we face in this country today. Because when you look at the defining factors and the defining features of those two concepts and you compare and contrast them, you'll find that civil rights do not equate to the supremacy of sovereignty. Integration does not bestow you the liberties of independence. And citizenship certainly does not confer the autonomy of statehood. So by function and definition, the two are vastly different.
Mm-hmm. Vastly. And we don't seem to understand that. As a general culture, we have not, we'll see tragedies happening in regards to, like, say, in the justice system, certain courts that we feel like certain rights are violated. But we are looking at it outside the context of the relationship that we have with these foreign people. We attempt to, I'm saying it, you know, Africans in America as a collective, attempt to try to harmonize the political philosophy and say, oh, well, it's, you know, citizenship for me, it's citizenship for you, and so therefore there should be equal justice under the law, because that's what the European keeps saying to us to keep us, you know, calm, what have you. But that is not true, real, in any stretch of the imagination. And I have been the first to try to advocate the idea that we need to have a different philosophy, which now I've learned from you, it's the philosophy of sovereignty. That's what it is, self-governance. if we don't look to those people to judge our cases, to protect us, protect, keep our communities free of crime, and to, you know, just handle all of our problems, as you mentioned, to solve our problems, or to be any way active or dynamic in the operation and the function of our societies, our communities, then we could be about the business of addressing these issues and concerns, and we won't have to suffer all these injustices that we do. But we believe, I mean, I'm not saying we, you and I, because those who are sovereign-minded, who we're salt and peppered around in the way our neighbor, our community works right now, that we're salt and peppered. We got sovereign-minded in those that seek integration, and we're the obvious, you know, minority. However, as a whole, what our community has been doing, we've all been taken along for this ride, you know, and so we have to be able to, you know, get off that bus, if you will, and create a different type of destination that is sovereign to move people. We won't have to be victims and paying these consequences for unsovereign.
Yeah.
Unsovereignty.
Well, we know what Carter G. Woodson wrote in Miseducation of the Negro, and Dr. Amos Wilson has a quote where he says, and I'm paraphrasing, that ultimately, intelligence is measured by the degree to which you solve your problems. And so in combining the philosophies that and the truths that Carter G. Woodson framed in Miseducation of the Negro, and combining that with what Dr. Amos Wilson said about intelligence, it tells us then that the end use of our knowledge is not being used in a way that's self-beneficial. But certainly our intellect has an end use, and that needs to be examined, you know, because what problem is it solving if it's not solving our own problems? You know, where like with the river, it has, you know, it has its origin in it, and it has its mouth. It has the source, and it has the opening where it flows into a larger body. Where is that going with us, our intellect? What body is it flowing into whereby somewhere along the way we are not solving our own problems? And so I know we only have a few minutes left. You know, let me say this in the remaining time, that unless we begin to control the end use of our intellect and begin to strategically divert it into tributaries that will resolve the long-standing unresolved issues that we face that neither time nor legislation has been able to resolve, then I don't see how we can expect things to get better when, in fact, the very sources that are creating the problems, that are responsible for the problems, they're not weakening to any great extent. So we have a problem whereby if we don't fix it ourselves, if we don't assemble it ourselves, and I always say sovereignty has assembly required, like when you purchase a product and you have to put it together, it's the same thing with sovereign ideals. It requires that assembly is necessary.
Mm-hmm. Right. We must put in the work.
Absolutely.
And we have to develop that. We'll take a brief a break and have a few messages, and we'll come back, and we can wrap up with a few more of your thoughts. And if anyone would like to speak with Brother Aharon, you can call in at area code 323-580-5707. And we'll be right back after these messages.
welcome to AfricanImpressions.com. African Impressions is a black-owned business that offers products made by the global African community. African Impressions offers the finest in African-made jewelry, craft, clothing, and so much more. As the renaissance of the African community rapidly approaches, you need to add acquiring products crafted by members of the global African family to your repertoire of activities. We must rediscover more of our ancient cultural habits, which we struggle to regain, and incorporate them into our daily lives. Support African craftsmen and women by shopping at AfricanImpressions.com today. Hope to see you there.
Listen to Love in Black with Charles and Jalavette on the Tribal Family Station on blogtalkradio.com.
There we will share our experiences and our insights on marriage and love, sex, respect, and honor. We're on every Thursday evening on the Tribal Family Station.
I'm Eric Teamer, host of Common Sense Conversations. Join me every Tuesday and Friday when I put common sense where it ain't so common. That's Common Sense Conversations every Tuesday and Friday, 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central, 3:30 Pacific. Common Sense Conversations on blogtalkradio.com.
The Woman's Song Community Experience is an extension of the Woman's Song Facebook community. Woman's Song was created with the mission to promote sisterhood and solidarity amongst women of color the world over. The Community Experience radio broadcast is an outreach effort to bring lecturers, authors, healers, spiritualists, and others with the necessary information to assist us in our campaign to repair ourselves. Our community is in dire need of reformation. During this Renaissance period of awareness, we will honor the womb man, and we seek to bridge the gap of understanding, love, and the upliftment of our sisters in crisis. Will you join us? We need your help in bringing this new awakening to all who desire its enlightenment. Become a part of our commitment to elevation as we work together to lift the divine earth to their rightful places. Woman Song. She's singing.
Listen in to African Conversations on the African Knowledge Network, where we will converse with researchers about matters significant to the African diaspora community. Join us on Facebook on the African Conversations community page. Enjoy the dialogue on African Conversations on blogtalkradio.com. Welcome back to African Conversations with Ezra Aharon, our guest for today. He's discussing his books Pawn Sovereignty and Sovereign Evolution. Anyone would like to speak with Ezra Aharon by asking a question by phone, you can dial in at area code 323-580-5707. Welcome back, Brother Israel Aron. How are you tonight?
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. And I know we only have just a few minutes left, but I wanted to segue what we were talking about, preparing our framework for having, you know, a sovereign approach to our future. But can we, I mean, just as a closer, one way before you deliver your closing remarks, we deal with explain how our the placebo politics that keeps us, I guess, ensnared into new traps, and thereby, you know, we were paying these unsovereign consequences and being led under these new ruses of perceived benefits of power from voting and having elected officials. And I always make a joke, often make the joke about the Chocolate City, you know, the album Parliament put out in 75, and how, you know, George Clinton was saying how he wants to get these cities he was naming, you know, then we will have arrived, and we have many cities, and there's still no power.
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak to that for us, please?
Yeah, well, the placebo politics and power that I refer to, it reverts back to civil rights integration and citizenship versus sovereignty, independence, and statehood, that you're not going to be able to achieve the heights of freedoms with civil rights integration and citizenship. So it's more so like a placebo where you think that you are getting better, or you think that you have the proper political properties to get you well. Just as with a placebo, it doesn't really contain the proper medicinal properties to get you well, but psychologically, you could actually think and feel better. And in some cases, people do actually get better with that state of mind. In this case, with the placebo of politics, one believes and thinks that the properties are there, but in essence, because of the fact that when you place the two concepts on the scale, you'll find that by function and definition, with the powers of sovereignty, independence, and statehood, comes the intrinsic governmental authority whereby you legislate, you regulate, you grant, or you repeal things like civil rights integration and citizenship. And so this is a fact of life that Africans in America must indeed come to terms with as we move forward into this century, because, as I said, it's not an equal merger of two politically liberated people sitting at the table sharing powers.
Right. Right. It's not the situation at all. And do you have any final remarks to leave with our audience?
Well, as I said, it's an evolution that we must be concerned with, and that's the title of my latest work, Sovereign Evolution. And if I could encapsulate it, I would say that today, when you look at it, today's the political world of today is light years away from both the 1860s when segregation was progress and the 1960s when, say, riding in the front of a bus was considered progress. Because where you sit on a bus today is becoming more and more relatively politically cosmetic. When you consider how the world is unfolding with wars and the webbings of geopolitics that, say, control the chromium of the bus, the oil that goes into the bus, and the rubber that goes for the bus's tires, you know, when you consider all of that, that it's a different day and time, because our conceptions and our moral obligations of freedom must continually evolve with the times to keep, as I said before, in direct pace with the demands and circumstances of the time. So it's not about where you sit on the bus, because the bus itself is being geopolitically manipulated in ways that where you sit is almost irrelevant. Mm-hmm. So with that analogy, I would leave you to understand that the evolution must continue.
Exactly. We thank you for joining us this evening, and could you please share with our audience your information, like where your column, your website, and where you can be contacted, and where your books can be purchased?
Yes. Listeners can go to my website, www.EzraSpeaks.com. That's Ezra with an H, E-Z-R-A-H, Ezra Speaks, SPEAKS.com. And I can be emailed at Ezra, E-Z-R-A-H, at EzraSpeaks.com.
All right, well, thank you. We appreciate you for joining us and sharing with us your research and your insights. And we hope to, you know, have you on again to, you know, share some of your new insights that you have in the future.
Thank you so much, brother. Really appreciate it.
Okay, you're welcome. And a thank you, too, to the listening audience for tuning in and sharing your evening with us on African Conversation. Good night.
Not a girl.